Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Joanne Dahlketter with Performing Edge Coaching International, and it is April the 23rd, 2015, and today we're going to be talking about stress in athletes and pressure that athletes feel in all different situations, but particularly situations where they're qualifying for a team or a particular event, or going into some new thing, maybe, or try to get into college, college of their choice, those sorts of things where there's particular stress or pressure there. And so wanted to talk about that and then how to handle that. And also, welcome Michelle and Alex and there's other people joining us too that I think that are on mute too. So we'll talk about those and any questions. And the main issue for this, or main purpose, of course, for these calls is to answer your questions and work with you and on any situations that you have. So I want to talk about the stress and mental health issues. But first, maybe, Michelle, do you want to share just for a moment what happened with you and as an example of an athlete getting injured?
Right now all my athletes are pretty healthy, so I can't really comment on that.
You had just broken your leg yourself?
Oh, myself, yes. Sorry, so what's the question?
Well, I just, because I wanted to offer some suggestions real quick about how to deal with being injured and being on crutches and that kind of thing. So you had broken your leg with mountain biking?
Yeah, broke my fibula and tore the ligament off the bone. So they put a plate in the fibula and then put a plate in the ankle, one of the ankle bones, and reattached the ligament to that. So I'm 6 to 8 weeks non-weight bearing.
Yeah, meaning on crutches and
yeah,
no fun. I know how frustrating that can be. but I was just gonna say that I've been in that situation 3 or 4 times with surgeries, foot surgeries, bunion, and then another time with a foot problem. And a lot of times, athletes. The good thing about being an athlete, if you get injured, is the bad thing is, of course, you're so active that you can't get around as well and can't be as active. But the good thing is that you can be really. Most athletes are stronger, so other parts of your body can make up for the parts that can't be used at that time. So, for instance, with crutches, all of a sudden you're. Instead of, some people would just say, oh, just put me in a wheelchair and I'll wheel myself around kind of thing, which is okay, but then you're not getting nearly enough, movement or exercise, so it's good that you're on the crutches. And what I did was, I just thought to myself, okay, how can I get around and how can I do things, even though you don't have your hands to carry things because you're on the crutches, so every time I would always carry a backpack or a fanny pack kind of thing. And, of course, it's a little difficult with a cup of coffee, like you say. that's more tricky to carry. But if you have a water bottle or something, you could just, let that dangle between two fingers or put that in a, there's these little fanny packs that actually have a water bottle holder kind of thing. So as I'd go around the house, I would just have this fanny pack on and have the water bottle holder in there and carry the cell phone back and forth so I could always be accessible that way. So it's a good when you get injured like that and all of a sudden you can't use your legs, and then the good thing is your arms get a lot stronger and your upper body has to compensate for your lower body, and then you think, well, okay, I've got my shoulders and I can still use carry a backpack or a fanny pack to carry things around. And you can get, that's where the mental part comes in. I think the mindset and being able to be mentally strong and get creative and think, how can I do things differently, right? So just some suggestions there. I don't know if you're dealing with that, if you've worked that kind of thing out, Michelle, but it's a good way to, if you've experienced it, then when the next time your any of your athletes get injured, you'll be able to speak from experience, right?
Yes, I'll definitely be coming from a more compassionate perspective.
Yeah,
I'll know what they're
right.
going through. Yeah.
Yeah, and of course, there's the mental, the downside of it, well, the frustration of not being able to do what you want to do, and dealing with that part, right? Have you been able to shift your mindset to, or how did you deal with, oh, God, now I'm not going to be able to do anything for a while? I just wanted to ask you as an example of, you know, how to deal with that with your athletes, too.
Well, Dr. Joanne, I just don't go there. I feel myself going there, and then I have to just reframe it and think about what are all the things I can be doing now that I'm laid up. And so I could spend a lot more time in the marketing of my business, which, you know, I may not have been doing otherwise. And I'm reconnecting with a lot of people and just, yeah, so I've been lucky so far. I haven't really had a mountain bike injury that's laid me up in 20 years of competition. So I feel grateful for that. And I'm just reframing pretty much.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. Marketing your business and the good thing about our what we do as performing edge coaches and in the sports psychology area is it doesn't require, you don't have to, you can be on the field with athletes, but you don't have to be. You can do a lot of work by phone.
Mm-hmm.
We can work with our mouths and our brains and don't have to be mobile. Yeah. And I know when I was laid up, I did the same thing and just thought, well, I can still, fortunately, I've got my computer here. I work at home. I can still do everything that I could do before except not work out. And I could do marketing with business, writing articles and reaching out and working with still work with clients, all those kind of things you can still do. So that's great.
You can also be a good patient too, and do everything you should be doing to get the healing going, so that you know, once the cast does come off, hopefully everything is good to go and you're back in action. So
uh-huh.
I'm pretty motivated to just take it easy and elevate and just really not overdo it, because I don't want to be in this position any longer than I have to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And learn, you know, become a good patient and student of that, whatever injury it is. So, you know, mm-hmm. if you're doing that, finding out, have good care and finding out from your doctor, okay, what do I need to do? What can I do? What can't I? Should I not do? And do everything. I know when I 3 years ago, I had a bicycle accident and I broke my hip, my left hip, and it was the femur bone in the left hip. And they were thinking I was going to have hip replacement surgery, which sounds awful. I was so scared. But then they had to go in and see. You have to sign all the papers saying, I trust you, and, yeah, I consent to doing any kind of surgery. And then they go in and have to do this live x-ray to find out what they need to do. And I was fortunate that they just put 3 screws in the femur bone, which is real very close to the hip. And then I was, again, on crutches like you for the 6 weeks, but very delicate, because it's so high, it's a very delicate area, so I had to be really careful. But I used visualization, too. Of course, that's a really important thing, using the skills that we teach our athletes, to use that for yourself, too, to visualize healing, visualize the bone, you know, coming together, getting strong, and all the connective tissue, you know, working well as you start to recover later. I start to do exercises, you know, down the road. Yeah, visualize blood going to that area. Yeah, that's great. Is that, I heard a ding. Did someone else come on too?
Hi, Dr. Joanne. It's Amy.
Hi, Amy. How are you?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Okay, good. So we're get going. Going to go into our topic here with stress and athletes. And
okay.
But
sorry, I'm late.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, we were just talking about Michelle just broke her leg with a mountain biking accident.
Oof.
Yeah. So
that's
I wish you. Yeah. I wish. Is that helpful, Michelle? Or hopefully.
Yep, that's great. Thanks, Dr. Joanne.
Okay, so you might be on mute there. Amy, do you want to quickly share anything that you're, any progress you're doing, making?
Let's see, what's been happening here? I just finished my third workshop at St. Joe's with the men's and women's team, and that went really well. I was very happy with it. I got some good feedback. So,
well, what team was it?
The men's and women's varsity tennis team.
Oh, yeah.
At St. Joe's. I did three workshops over the last 3 months with them.
St. Joe's College?
Yeah, St. Joe's University.
Yeah, great.
So that went really well. And I really want to continue it. So he's finishing the season with the guys. They have a big conference tournament. And then he said, you know, he's going to talk to the kids and see what their feedback is and see if we can continue, because I'd really love to do that. It's one of my favorite things to do. Working
yeah.
with kids. And then I have another, and then Haverford College, I sent an email to him, and he said, reach out to me after May 3rd, after the season's over. So I'm just trying to plant seeds in smaller colleges, because I think it's really difficult to get into the big Ivy League ones. They, you know, they have a famous sports psychologist that does their teams, and it's very bureaucratic. I think it's much easier to deal with smaller schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good advice.
Yeah, that's kind of my plan. And I'm also getting involved in the Parkinson's Council, which my dad died of Parkinson's, and I was really involved in it about 15 years ago. And I connected with this neuroscientist who runs the support groups for the Parkinson's caretakers and patients. And I'm going to go next Tuesday, and there may be different opportunities for me to use my coaching in that organization. It's called the Philadelphia Parkinson's Council, and I think that would be really rewarding for me to be able to work with people, because I've lived it, I've seen it, I see what happens to families. So that's another thing that I'm doing right now.
Yeah, wow, what a fantastic thing. That's great, because it's great when you have a problem or you have a family member that's had a particular problem, and then, yeah, you live it, you understand it, you know what it's like to be there, and then you're in the perfect position to work with others going through that, and you can tell your own story, which is so
yeah,
powerful.
I think that's the most powerful thing. I mean, you know, being a coach is helpful, but I think being able to tell your own story about what it was like for my mom being the caretaker and how difficult and demoralizing it is for the patient. You know, my dad was a really prominent physician and a great athlete, and it just ate away at him. But, you know, he was very positive and had a great attitude, and I really respect that in people. So I'd like to be able to use my background with that and to be able to help some families, and both the patients and the caregivers.
Yeah, because it can really take a toll on the caregivers as well. Yeah, to see this person that you know that's really, yeah, able-bodied and prominent to go downhill kind of thing,
mm-hmm.
and realize that it's you do the best, make the best you can of each day kind of thing. Yeah, great. Yeah, and the tennis team, you know, so that we can all learn. From you with those workshops with the tennis team, how were you structuring those? Was it all day kind of thing, or what?
No, it was. The theme was building the foundations of emotional health and wellness for college athletes.
Mm-hmm.
And I did three different workshops. They were 75 minutes.
Uh huh.
With different. Remember, we were talking about this before I started, kind of throwing around some different ideas about what I was doing.
Yeah.
But I turned it I kind of turned it into something a little more than just sports psychology coaching. I wanted it to be the growth and development of the human being from the inside out, and building on their strengths and their understanding what their wellness levels, their emotional wellness levels are, and being grounded as a person, mm-hmm. and just building on that theme. And I think, you know, I think they really liked it, and I made them interact and do all different kinds of things and talk out loud. You know, each person had to respond. And, you know, some people don't like doing that, but I think a lot of others do. And I think it bonds them. So I did that, and I was really happy with the way it went, and would like to use this as sort of a, you know, a foundation that I can take to other schools.
Yeah, a model and a foundation. Yeah, the nice thing is once you set up a program like that, yeah, you can duplicate it over and over again and replicate it for other schools, exactly. But then you can just go to that next school and say, what are the particular problems you're having, and then customize it a bit for that school kind of thing, so they feel like it's really special for them.
One of the activities that I did with them was about creating a vision. And
it was about
I gave
what? Sorry?
Them creating a vision
uh-huh.
for what they want themselves to look like in a year's time, a year from now. What do they want it to look like? What do they want it to feel like? What do they want to be doing in specific areas of their life? And so I gave them from the second workshop to the third workshop to think about it and create their vision statement. And I made everybody read their vision statement and explain what it was to them, what it meant. And I think it gave them a little bit of motivation and excitement. And part of the point was, you know what, if you don't have a vision, you're not getting there. You have to start with the vision and build towards it and, you know, put your goals into place.
Uh-huh.
So I like that exercise.
Yeah, great. So that's good. So have that, create a vision and have everybody share what that is kind of thing with each other. So
they learn a lot from each other. They learn about each other's character more than just, you know, how would they know that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Okay, great. Once they have that, you can learn from each other what their, if someone else has a vision of something, another person could add to their own vision statement something that they learned from someone else. Yeah. So good. Yeah, I heard a ding. Did someone come on or just rejoin us?
Hi, Dr. Joanne. It's Michelle. I got cut off, so
no problem.
I'll call back in. Thanks.
Oh, good. Yeah. So, well, great. Thanks for sharing that, Amy. And why don't we go into our the content here of what I wanted to talk about, and then we can continue with comments and questions here. Thanks to all of you for being here, Alex and Amy and Michelle and others that are here too. I think they're just muted. I had a chance to do an interview with the Huffington Post. They called me and they do a program called HuffPost Live. So I did that on Monday on stress and athletes particularly who are trying to qualify for something or get into a school. Like Alex, we were talking earlier about the, maybe high school kids that are doing their SATs and trying to qualify for colleges, or an athlete that's trying to go pro and get into the NFL. In this case, with the HuffPost Live, they interviewed an athlete named Anthony Boone on the show, as well as myself, talking about the stresses of athletes who are trying to qualify for something. And when you think about it, most athletes, if they're serious about their sport, they're usually qualifying at some level, whether it's just to get from, junior varsity to a varsity team, or with his sister try to get on a little league team, or trying to get into a college, or trying to make a certain time, or trying to all the way up to the Olympics, trying to make the Olympic team. All athletes are usually trying to move up in some way, and so that puts them in situations that's much more likely to cause stress and mental health issues. And so I think sometimes stress can be a good thing because it helps you to move forward and to keep yourself motivated and getting stronger. But it can also create an environment that stretches the athlete's resources and can endanger their well-being if they're too stressed and don't have an outlet, don't have someone like us to help them with it. So it's important to be able to have that. That's why our field, I think, that performing edge coaches are so needed. And sports psychology is so needed in this area because there's a lot of athletes that are really stressed out that are not talking about it or maybe not coming forward or not seeking help. So particularly at the, elite level or professional level, I think the sports environment is about as high-pressured as you can imagine. And so I think being aware of your, having athletes be aware of their anxiety and stress level and their emotional state is really critical to doing well in any event. Once they're aware of it, then they can properly direct their energies away from worrying about themselves to direct their energies toward a greater performance. So what they did on the HuffPost Live interview is they asked me to... they said, can you send us some talking points? This is a little bit of media training for you as well. If you're on a show or let's say you, that's one way you can get more business as well. Alex, you were asking about that was to get people interested is maybe contact your local newspaper or magazine or blog. There's all kinds of online blogs with sports and sports psychology and you just ask to contribute something. When it's online, of course, you can always make sure they include a link to your website and maybe answer a question or do a particular topic. They asked me on this program to send them talking points. What that means is, just topics that you'll talk about or questions. The best way is just to give them a list of questions that you want to talk about. So I wrote those questions down and then just sent them to them. And then basically most of the time if they're a media person, most media people are really overworked and they want you to do the work for them. So if you send them a whole list of questions, then they're really happy about that because they'll most likely use those questions and just ask you those same questions back. And if you just prepare for answering those particular questions, then that takes the stress off of you because you know what they'll be asking, so you know what to say. So that's what I did was I sent them a list of these questions, and then beforehand I wrote out each of the answers that I would give to each question, so I felt more prepared that way, and you can really sound professional. Basically, if you're doing it by phone or even video, you can be reading, you can have your Word document up and then be actually reading the answer to your question so you don't have to fumble around or wonder what you're going to say. Of course, you want it to sound kind of spontaneous and more from your heart. You can add things, but if you have something there that you can say that you prepared, then you feel really, can look very professional. You can position yourself as the expert. So I sent to them, so things like, to give you an example, I said, Dr. Joanna, what have you noticed as a sports psychology expert, what have you noticed in your work with highly stressed professional athletes? I asked what produces anxiety in athletes, and some of the other questions were, why do athletes feel stressed? what are the sources of stress for them, and then how is anxiety manifested, or how is it shown, both physically and mentally, and then what are the warning signals? Tell us some of the common symptoms of athlete stress, and then talk about, you know, that we not only worry in our minds, our whole body worries, and kind of extrapolate or talk about what does that mean. And then another question is, you know, what are some, how can athletes manage their high stress levels better? And then what are your three P's or three tools? Can you have three? It's often good to have three of something, so if you can think of three tools for handling a situation, or in this case dealing with your stress in sports, then that can help to, outline what it is that you do. And then also, what do you do as a sports psychologist or sports psychology coach to help athletes in this area? Give various tips for that. So those were some of the questions that I asked. And they might not ask all the questions to you, but if they, chances are they'll ask a good part of those. And so that makes their job easier, and that makes your job easier too, to have a really good interview. So with the first one, you know, I just talked about how, you know, kind of defining psychological stress, and it's just defined as that relationship between the athletes and the environment, or their sports environment, that kind of stretches their athlete resources and can endanger their well-being or put them at mental or physical difficulty. And then what produces anxiety in athletes? Well, I think one of the main things is that stress and anxiety, it occurs when there's a difference between what is hoped for or expected and what is actually happening. So if you're, let's say, primed to do a really a good performance, you're well-trained, but then you encounter, you know, say, the weather is really bad, or let's say if it's a team sport, the other team is a lot better than you thought, or your body starts aching in some way. Let's say you've got a knee injury. And then on top of that, the team is counting on you to, say, get the points needed in that particular game or race, or you've got pressures from the outside. Then those are things that can cause a lot of stress. And chances are with those kind of conditions, the athlete's not going to be doing their personal best unless they work with someone like you, performing edge coaches to be able to change their to be able to deal with that ahead of time and imagine all the different scenarios, because that external pressure might still be there. So, it's important for you as coaches to be able to read your athletes, teach your athletes to read their own mental and physical stress cues. How are they feeling mentally and physically, and then interpret those correctly and notice if their stress level is too high. And as you get to work with your athletes longer, you can tell, you know, if they are stressed more, and then help them to intervene early before the stress becomes too unmanageable. And you can help your athletes to, you know, learn to take deep breaths, do some centering, do some positive self-statements, visualize different scenarios, and relax enough to problem solve and readjust appropriately to the situation. So all kinds of techniques, you know, those power words, visualizing, just being in the present, those kinds of things, making a list of those things they cannot control and those things they can control, and then being able to just focus on the things they can control. That can be so helpful in a really stressful, high-pressure situation. And so then the next question they asked me was, that I gave them, is why do athletes feel stressed? What are the sources of stress for them? And when you think about it, at the top level, at every level, there's, of course, competition from the other players, on their team, and then the other players on the other team. There's that going on. And there's worry that the team place might be lost if that athlete's not doing their best. you know, let's say you're working with a basketball player that's the key player for the team, the center or the main forward, and, you know, and he's not at his best, then there's a lot of pressure on that particular player because the whole team may suffer or the whole team may lose the game if they're depending on that one player. So that's one particular pressure that you may deal with. And as a coach coaching that athlete. And then there's the pressure from the team managers or the coaches, pressure to perform well on the team. So there's that source of stress as well. And then at the higher levels, there's sponsors' expectations. So, you know, on this particular show on the HuffPost Live, they were talking with an athlete, Anthony Boone, who's has some sponsors, and then he may get, but he's working toward much higher level sponsorship, and if he does well, then he could get, you know, a much higher, you know, a level contract. So, and then once you get signed up with a sponsor, of course, the expectations are really high to perform well, or you might lose that contract. So there's that pressure. Other sorts of pressures are the long tours away from home. You know, if a team is traveling around the country on a as part of doing a series of team competitions or races, so the away from home creates a lot of stress because you don't have that consistency of being home or your support system. And then there's a need to balance your home life and your work life. So if you've got somebody who has an athlete who has their a family or has a wife and kids, and then they're having to be away from home or a lot with professional team responsibilities, then there can be stress at home that they're not giving enough time to family. Then there's the fans' expectations, you know, people watching them. And there's the big game stress when you're getting closer to a championship game. You know, it creates more stress there. And then, of course, those are external stresses. And then there's the internal pressure, you know, of the athletes. Often athletes are real perfectionists and place a lot of pressure on themselves inside, regardless of the pressures outside. Or they take on all those external pressures and then turn them into internal pressures too. So those are some of the sources of stress. And then at the higher level, there's the even at, you know, college levels and high school now, there's so much documentation. There's usually, you know, cameras there, video cameras, and so there's media attention 24/7. So that adds to the stress. Of course, with social media, there's Twitter and Facebook, and if an athlete is doing well, you know, that works great. You know, all the fans are tweeting real time, you know, what their opinions are of this person, and it adds to, you know, that athlete's confidence. But if they make a mistake, which, you know, athletes are bound to at some point, you know, not do well, have a bad game. And if this athlete is known well, then, you know, everybody's tweeting about how this athlete messed up and what they were doing wrong. And then it can be like a pack of wolves kind of thing going after one athlete. And they have, you know, that's something an athlete has no control over. So this guy, for instance, they're interviewing on the HuffPost, professional athlete was saying that his family is watching these tweets and watching everybody tweeting negative things about him and really concerned and where the athlete is trying to not focus on that, but the athlete's family's focusing on it because it's right out there. So that creates another source of stress for athletes that we never had before, all the social media stuff, where these real-time tweeting and Twitter is going on, conversations right after something happens. So that's something to talk about with your athletes if that may be going on. It can create a tremendous stress there, because once that goes up online, then it can't, you know, it's usually there forever. People can refer back to that sort of thing. So there's that, and then there's the ever-increasing commercial pressures of sport. So the growing amounts of money at stake with professional athletes, that serves as a real pressure cooker atmosphere where they feel like they have to live up to a very high standard to be able to have this, this growing amount of sponsorship coming in. The money, the more money that's there, the more pressure. And, you know, say if the sponsor is paid money for a particular, like say in football, in 2 weeks from now they're, doing the draft picks for football. This is why this topic came up. So if sponsors have paid money for a particular football player to wear their products, or a club has signed a huge contract to secure a player, then they're likely, the athlete is likely to feel, you know, under pressure to perform well, and sometimes even play when injured, you know, against their best health interests. So that's another conflict or possible problem that can occur. That they, you know, normally an athlete should, if they're say injured or having a strain, they want to rest and make sure that, just like Michelle, after you're breaking your leg with the mountain biking, you're staying off of it and for the proper amount of time and allowed to rest. Whereas these completely so that you can heal completely. Whereas some of these players, it's often a pressure to get back on the court or back on the field before they're fully well again. So that's a really tough one to deal with, and some of the conflicts that you can deal with the player to be able to negotiate all of that, their own, to, and you can sometimes help fight for their own interests, their health interests, when in fact there's all this other stuff going on, pressures to get back in. So there's all that. I wanted to highlight those different sources of stress that can come in. And then, of course, you got high school kids that are trying to qualify for or trying to get into a college of their choice, or trying to get a college scholarship, a sports scholarship. There may be hundreds of kids that are applying for one position, so there's a lot of a feeling of scarcity there, and that can put a lot of stress on kids to have to qualify for a particular, try to get into one slot at school, and a lot of times the coaches are, deciding who gets in to the college based on their sports performance. So, there's a lot of trying to show the athletes are, going to different tournaments or games and then having to perform well when these scouts are there or coaches that are looking for the best players. So what it can do is end up, instead of an athlete, having fun, starting out having fun in their sport or doing the sport just for fitness or for enjoyment. I think somebody has a dog barking. If you want to just press *6 to mute your phone, that'd be great, just to, so we get a clear recording and so everyone can hear. And then if you would like to ask a question, just press *6 again. That'd be great. Thank you. But I was just saying that what happens with athletes is they tend to think it's, whereas earlier their sport was fun, now it becomes more of a job, and so they're feeling like a lot of pressure to do well in their sport just so they can get into, get that scholarship position. And so your job can be as a coach to try to regain that sense of fun and enjoyment from the game, and to try to not put so much to, of course, the scholarship is important, but to put that in the background more. So they're not, that's not the most, that's not just so prevalent on their mind that it interferes with sleep and doing so well. That they can just enjoy the process, enjoy the journey. And so another question that they asked that I wanted to move to now was how is that anxiety, when athletes do have that stress and anxiety, how is it shown in both the physical and cognitive terms or in mentally. And I think, you know, our bodies respond. Usually each athlete has a kind of a certain way that they respond with their stress, even though their circumstances might be quite different. I think we not only worry in our minds, but our whole body worries. So, you know, if say an athlete is worried about having a difficult conversation with their coach or their manager, they're picturing it in their mind, their whole body responds exactly as if you were right there in that confrontation. So an athlete might notice sweating or an elevated heart rate. And I think we always experience some reaction in our body that accompanies our mental state. And sometimes it's called choking. You know, that term choking, whenever worry comes into play, we often experience a disruption of focus and disability, you know, trouble performing well. And so choking is really, you know, making mistakes and critical errors in your sport. And some of the warning signals that I think it's good to be aware of, to help your athletes be aware of, are common symptoms. Some of the worst things that can happen are things like, you know, some athletes lashing out aggressively, either verbally or physically. Sleep can be disturbed. They can engage in risky behavior like drinking or drug taking. So it's and often they won't talk about it at first until it becomes a real problem. So it's good to be aware of that. Sometimes they don't show up for practices, or they could have poor performance. That's maybe shorter term, and then longer term, prolonged stress could cause, you know, really significant risks to their health, you know, with heart attacks or sexual dysfunction, you know, skin disorders, even, you know, in severe cases could lead to suicide, and that's happened with a lot of football players that we've noticed lately who are, you know, because of head trauma or pain, concussions, that sort of thing. So those are, you know, extreme cases, but just wanted to make you aware of that. And so it's always good to assess for that kind of thing for athletes that are noticing depression, severe depression or anxiety. So I think the good news is that our bodies really provide us with a lot of warning signals that we're getting out of control. And so it's good to ask your athletes about the different things that they're experiencing. So ask them, you know, like the mental cues. Ask them, are you having a lack of focus? Or are you resorting to any old habits, negative habits? Do you have a sense of confusion ever, or, you know, inability to make good decisions? You know, sometimes you just can't decide what you're supposed to be doing. Ask your athletes, are they forgetting critical details? You know, sometimes just making mistakes. Sometimes rapid speech, noticing that they're, talking faster or in a different way than they have before. So those are some of the things to ask your athletes as far as mental cues. And then as far as physical cues, have a high stress state, you can, you know, ask that. Sometimes you can just notice these things by looking at an athlete, or also ask them, what about, you know, do you have a sense of fatigue, are you feeling irritable? Sometimes they, you know, just feel like they're upset about things more often. Do they have high blood pressure, high heart rate? And sometimes athletes will go to a doctor, and you can get those tests or communicate with an athlete's doctor with permission to find out about that. They notice hypertension or hyperventilation, breathing quickly. And sometimes a lot of those things are happening together, then it could be, you know, a panic attack. Most of the time it's just, you know, a few of these symptoms at a time. And then also muscle tension is a really important one to look out for. And, you know, muscle tension, muscle twitches, like in the neck and shoulders. And then, with the digestive system, sometimes athletes will have diarrhea or need to urinate and all of that more often. So they've got an unsettled stomach, or cotton mouth, meaning dry mouth. So those are things that to look for. Any visual distortion. Sometimes if it gets really bad, like if someone has migraine headaches or something, it can actually affect their vision. So those are things to look out for with the mental cues and the high and the physical cues. And one of the things that's important I wanted to emphasize here is another question that to ask ourselves is, why don't athletes ask for help? Sometimes they may have a lot of these symptoms, but they're afraid to ask for help. It just happens at the lower levels as well as higher professional levels. And I think it's that kind of, I think now, the good news is that now it's a lot more acceptable to be able to have a sports psychologist coach or a mental coach that's getting to be more and more something that people are using. But as in the professional level, oftentimes athletes could suffer longer with their stress or depression because they may be reluctant to seek help because the sports industry is, really not admitting an issue, it could be difficult because they have the fear of being dropped by their managers or ridiculed by teammates. And I think it's taking that first step, admitting there is an issue, that sometimes that's what we can help them to take and make the coach aware that there may be these kinds of problems with the team or team members. So, for instance, I had a client that was operating in a high-performance environment and doing really well, and then all of a sudden he was having a tough time, and he thought, how am I going to put up my hand and say I'm struggling? And he thought he might be seen as weak or not doing so as well by teammates or by the opposition team or by the media or by the public. So they don't... sometimes won't say anything at first, but it's really important that if we can help athletes to raise their hand and to ask for help, even if you're offer that, maybe a few sessions free of charge or a complimentary consultation, that can help so much, and it's it can really help an athlete from... because if they let things deteriorate, then they can really reach a breaking point. It's important that speak to even, doing talks for groups just to raise that greater awareness, I think is really helpful so that athletes understand, so that it doesn't take so long for athletes to ask for help. Because there's that kind of hidden depression there that may be going on for a long period of time. So the couple other questions I wanted to address is just the most important ones are, how can athletes deal with their high stress levels and how can we help them? I think the determining factor is not how much anxiety is there, but how the athlete perceives their own personal signals of anxiety and how they are channeled. And so what you can do, what we can do as performing edge coaches is to, tell athletes that athletes who consistently perform well, we can help them to find ways to rechannel their negative emotions, take charge of their thoughts, and really turn their nervous energy into a powerful source of inner strength and confidence. So whatever they are experiencing, they can turn it around. Reframe it, like Michelle, like you were saying, with the broken leg that you just had. I think it's great that you could share your story and all that you're going through, and able to reframe that instead of getting depressed or upset. Being able to say, "Hey, okay, now I can. What else can I do with this situation while I'm healing here?" And be able to quickly shift from a worried mind to a more confident focus and focus on. Healing and the athlete sport and then other aspects of their lives. So, because actually, a lot of the research shows that from athletes shows that virtually all athletes experience high levels of anxiety, pre-competitive anxiety. And many of them experience extremely high levels of anxiety and stress. But even with that, high levels of nervousness, many athletes perform really well, exceptionally well, even close to their potential, even with all that stress. So the key thing is not how much stress they have, but how they use it, how they perceive it, and that's where we come in, I think, to be able to rechannel that, because most athletes can focus and redirect all that energy to the task at hand. And, for instance, you know, they can say, understand that, like, butterflies in the stomach, say, that's a sign. They can say to themselves, okay, I'm nervous. This is the way I feel when I do my very best. And these feelings are associated with great performances. I am nervous, but this can propel me to move forward and do even better. So one of the things that I think one of the key things that I work with athletes that's important is, I notice most athletes, one of the sources of stress is that they are overly concerned about the outcome of their performance and only the outcome. Like I saw a girl last night that's a high school, she's high school going into college, going into Stanford here as a track and cross-country athlete, and she's really only focuses on the time and wants to, you know, improve with every track meet. And, you know, from one track, her very first track meet was 2 weeks ago, and she did okay, and then the next week she actually beat another woman that beat her in the first track meet. She beat her, just creamed her in the next meet, but yet she was still very disappointed because she didn't improve on her time. And so, you know, athletes tend to be really hard on themselves, and so they're so overly concerned about the outcome, you know, the time or the place. So what we did was try to go back and say, well, what are all the factors of that performance? What are all the different factors of, and how the winning is only one way. She did win the race, but was disappointed because her time didn't improve. She said winning didn't mean anything because she wanted to improve her time. But, of course, it takes time to do that, and performances don't always, your improvement doesn't always go in a linear fashion of, you know, getting faster with every race. You have to, and so we will kind of put performance into perspective, realizing that it can, you know, effort level is really important as well, and learning, and just making, realizing that it's a process that happens, and it takes time to go through this. And so make a list of the things that you can't control, like you can't control the other athlete's performance or the weather or what the coach thinks of you, all those sorts of things, and then make a list of those things you can control. That's what we did last night with this girl, and she made a list of things that she can control, like her mental attitude and her, you know, how much sleep she gets the night before and how she visualizes the race and you know, uses the MP3s and that kind of thing, and is really doing her mental training, a mental workout as well as physical workout. If you can reframe it that way, that it's not just psychology, but this is actually a mental, you know, like a mindset workout. You're training your mental muscles just like you are your physical muscles. I think that then athletes can put this in a better perspective. So another thing you can do then is teach your athletes how to assess their own stress response pattern. You can have them do I think that's really helpful for keeping like an accurate logbook, recording how they feel mentally and physically throughout each workout and race, and, you know, help them to determine their exact optimal performance profile. You know, say when they felt really good in a race, how stressed were they? And then you realize they can begin to reproduce this in each event that they do. and record the outcomes and assess their stress level, and then they learn the exact right energy state that leads to a good performance. So you could have them keep a logbook of their stress responses by writing out, say, on the top of the page, write stress response, and then workouts, pre-competition, and during competition, and then evaluation of performance afterward. And then on the left-hand side of the page, write, list the ways that you respond to competition, mentally and physically, like different things like, the most common ones that athletes might have, butterflies in the stomach, muscle twitches, or rapid breathing, or racing heart rate, or dry mouth, sense of confusion, those kind of things, and write down all the different things, and then they could keep track of the frequency and intensity of these responses. So it may be at the first, some of the, so that, it's okay to be stressed a bit, but not overly stressed, so they need to find that right level. So, and then the last thing I just wanted to mention was some tools that athletes can use to handle their stress. And of course, the most important one, I think, is centering and breathing, the first thing they can do, and that's something we can all do really easily, is to, take those 5 or 10 deep breaths before you start, before they start a workout or before they start a race or game or any competition, and then say some sort of power words as they're breathing in, like, I'm breathing in strength, and then as they exhale, say, I'm breathing out tension, or whatever power words that they come up with. And then secondly, just mentally rehearsing the event. So just doing it, see yourself doing it right, going over exactly how you'd like to feel in the competition and visualizing the different possible scenarios and just realizing you're prepared mentally for anything that might come up and anything you see yourself in the lead and see yourself coming from behind and racing, maybe being alone or being with other people or getting a second wind. All the different things that you can feel inside. And then just realizing that nervousness is okay, accepting the fact that you're going to be nervous and making that your ally rather than fighting with it. And even though there are these other levels, lots of stress going on the outside, I mentioned, like stress from the pressure from the coaches or the managers or other people, they can't really do anything about that during the game, so it's really important to just be able to focus on the things they can control and to realize that nervousness is okay. A certain level is okay. It's a good sign that you're excited and ready to roll, and you can say, this feeling is connected to doing my best. And oftentimes, if an athlete is a little more stressed, then it propels them to do even better because all that adrenaline can serve them well. And then once the game starts, usually they can relax and just enjoy the ride. So, those are some tips. The last one also is just to remind themselves that they're well-prepared, using those power words, thinking back on the great workouts they've had and saying, okay, this is, and having that, like, what I call it, a practice mindset. So rather than saying, okay, I'm in a game, which is a competition, which is totally different than practice, remind them that actually it's very similar. That's the reason they're practicing, is that it's this is a very familiar environment. Say, I've done these kinds of practices before, and I've done these same intervals, or I've done this same thing, and so I'm in a, even if they're in the game, say, this is just like practice. I'm in a practice mindset, and I can do this. I've done it in practice. I can do it in the race or in the game. So so those are some tips that I wanted to offer for the stress and pressure, and so I wanted to hand it back to you guys and see if you have any questions or comments or what's most helpful for you. Anyone can jump in. Do you have any examples of things that, does any of that kind of relate to any situations that you've had?
Dr. Joanne?
Yeah, Michelle?
Oh, hi. Yes, I just have a question because you, at the beginning of our conversation, you were talking about exams and SATs and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
So what you just we're talking about with the tools regarding how to handle stress before competition in practice. I'm assuming we could just use the same technique for preparing our athletes, helping them to prepare to write those exams. Is there anything else you can add to that?
You mean to take the exam?
Yeah, like I've noticed that's a question that's starting to come up now as we're heading into exam period. I don't know what's wrong with my throat, but I've got a few athletes that are trying to get into U.S. colleges still.
Uh-huh.
And
so are they having like test-taking anxiety?
That's exactly what's happening, yeah. My voice has just decided to quit on me.
Oh, that's okay. Yeah, that's a great question, Michelle, and actually that's a whole other area that you can go into, these same techniques of, the relaxation and confidence and mentally rehearsing the situation, the power words, all that can apply to actually taking an SAT exam. Is that what you're asking, the process of the test taking?
Exactly, yeah. Just to, they've done all they can, they're prepared for it, but they're just in freak out mode, as they're walking into the exam and they're not sleeping the night before, that sort of thing.
Yeah, and it's understandable to first normalize it for them, to go through and say it's normal to be anxious and be nervous, because it's just like... And then also draw a parallel of being an athlete, and it's just like a game where you prepared and practiced, and then all of a sudden you got to go into the big game. And sometimes they've gained certain skills in their sports that they can use and transfer over into their test taking too. To ask them, what strengths, what allows you to do well in your sports in high pressure situations, and find out what skills they already have from sports, and then see if you can transfer those into the test taking environment and look at the test as just another sport. So that's one idea, to say it's like, even though it's mental and so you're not moving around, but you're still using your, you're still, it's the same kind of situation where it's high pressure, but think of it like, if you can help them think of it like something they're familiar with, like there's a competition or their sport, except in this case, instead of competing against other students, think this is just, you're competing against yourself, and just seeing how well you can do on this test, and being able to use all those same techniques that they use to relax in sports, like breathing and relaxing and reminding yourself, I'm well prepared for this. And with each question, just being able to go through that kind of process, relaxing, clearing their mind, and saying it's okay, I can handle this situation. Oftentimes, I think with SATs too, most kids go through a training course right before that, I think.
Yep.
For SATs where they take practice tests. So in that way, it's like a practice, being in that practice mindset and saying, okay, trying to make the practice situation as much like the test taking as possible, and so making it a time test, and if they can take these practice tests imagine that they're in the test taking situation, and put a little bit of pressure on themselves there, then they can that can help them to be more prepared, I think, and to be able to, imagine and you could do a visualization with them, Michelle, and this is, I think this is a great thing for Alex and Amy and all of you on the call, and here all of you coaches listening to this, that it can open up a whole new area for you with regard to these kinds of principles, that you can use these for any students taking tests at any level, really. And I had a student that was, you know, I worked with her to do her first marathon a few years ago, and then she came back to me and said, oh, I've just gone through the law school, and now I have to take the bar exam, and could you, with these same techniques you used, performing edge techniques for helping me with the marathon, could we use those for the bar exam? And I thought, yeah, it's perfect. So we, you know, I helped her through that because it's it just like the SATs, it's even more intense kind of thing. But being able to have that kind of, you know, there's a certain time crunch, right, of certain time period. So if you can, if they can take the practice test within that same, you know, have that time crunch kind of thing, time stress there, so they get used to that, and anything to make the environment more like the testing environment to practice with that would be good, so that they feel like they're right there. And then you could, Michelle, make them a visualization and say you're in the, you know, you're walking into the test room, and they're saying, explaining the answer, the questions, and then you're, and then they're saying, okay, now you can begin. And just have them practice that whole process, and being able to take deep breaths at the beginning, and then also remember to continue to take the deep breaths, you know, maybe with each section, or whenever they get to a question that is not something they aren't sure of, to be able to take a deep breath and just visualize, okay, I'm clearing my mind. As I breathe in, I'm creating a space to you know, learning, I'm remembering this material, and as I breathe out, I'm, you know, clearing my mind out, and so they create more, because oftentimes that anxiety can get in the way of, they have the answer right there, it's in their brain, but they just need to be able to clear out the anxiety enough to access it, right? So that's a really key thing for test taking, to keep, if they are freaking out, you know, they're probably saying to themselves, ask them, what are they saying to themselves, and then write that down on the left-hand side of a page, the negative thoughts, the self-doubts, like, oh, I can't do this, I'm freaking out, what if I don't pass? Have them write those things down on the left-hand side of a page, and then on the right-hand side, write the power words or positive reframing. For each one negative thought, have them write three positive thoughts or three power words on the right-hand side. So, you know, if they're writing, say, I'm not going to be able to do this, or I can't remember the answers on the left, and on the right-hand side, write, you know, I'm preparing every day, I'm working toward this, I can complete the exam, and things like that, that it, the exam is just like my practice exams, you know, it just to have that practice mindset. Is that kind of... speak to what you were saying, Michelle?
Yep, that's great. Thanks a bunch.
Yeah, yeah. And also just, you know, I remember when I worked with this student for the bar exam, we just talked about taking care of yourself, too. You know, just eating right. A lot of times athletes will do crazy stuff, and they want to, like, load themselves up with caffeine or something right beforehand, but then that can create more anxiety. So it's good to just get really good sleep the night before, and then get up and just have, if they have a little bit of extra time in the morning, go out for a quick walk or exercise, to use those kind of things to wake up the brain rather than high amounts of caffeine, so that they can just enjoy the process. And then, you know, another thing, too, I was thinking of is... Well, I took my license, my exam for the to become a licensed psychologist, you know, several years ago, and I was the same way. I was freaking out, and I'm not really particularly good at taking tests myself. And I remember my supervisor said to me, she said, "You know, just think of this as an opportunity. This is an opportunity to be able to be really good in your profession or become a psychologist." This is just a, you know, opening the door, and so visualizing that. I thought, what a wonderful way to think about a test. It's just opening a door for me. the fact that I'm able to sit there and be able to be to take the test is a privilege. Actually, you know, it's to feel grateful for the chance. Only certain people get to sit for the exam, and so I've earned the right to sit and take this exam, and so. It's an opening, and it's just like a door opening for me to, or a window opening to a new opportunity to be able to help people. So if they can think about it that way and think about all the things that they'll be able to do, that this, like the SAT is like opening a door to new things that they want to do. If ask them what they want to study, if they want to go into being a doctor or a physical therapist or... A lot of athletes want to go into sports. You know, think about this as an opening a door to, opening a career for them of what it is that they want to do. So that could be really, really helpful too, I think. Not just thinking of the test as just this one kind of test, but it's actually, the beginning, the first step to a new life for them. So,
and then you're actually thinking about process rather than outcome, which reduces the stress as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, think about the process of being, this is just one step along a path. It's not like that, because what they tend to think of is this is life or death situation. This is it, you know, kind of thing. But if you can think of it as this is just part of a... as you say, a process, and they're just a learning opportunity, a door opening to doing something they want to do. It's great. And also, they don't want to think about failing in the test, of course. But if they don't pass, if they can take it again, you're just thinking there's always other opportunities. If they don't pass, kind of thing, there's another chance. That's good too. But this is a chance for them to learn how to relax in a pressure situation, which there'll always be more pressure situations in life. Yeah. So that's great. I'm glad you brought that up, Michelle. It's a good a whole other area that is so important, and that they can look at it as another sport. It's like a mind sport, or however you want to look at it. A way to test their put their mind through a race or a game. Think of it as a game to use their mind, I think that way. And if it is the SAT, and if they do want to do their sports in school, then think about that of visualize being able to do their competing in their sports in college, and this is an opening, a vehicle for doing that. So great, yeah. Thanks for asking that question, Michelle.
Thanks, Dr. Joanne.
Yeah, good. Other questions or any other comments that you guys have? Yeah, okay. Well, I think we're about out of time here. So thank you so much, everyone, for joining us. And our next call would be May. It's always the second and fourth Thursday of the month. So... next one will be, second would be May the 14th, and then May the 28th. It looks like next, we have 5 Thursdays in April, so if I have time, I may do another one, a special call on one of those extra Thursdays there, but put down May 14th. Sounds great. Anything that was particularly helpful for you? Michelle, are you still on the call?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, what was most helpful for you?
Yeah, I liked what you said about anxiety and stress and normalizing it, and the fact that it's always going to be there, and it's important to look how look at how the athlete is perceiving that. And because with some athletes, they're able to use that to power their performance. And then it's not an issue. So stress in itself isn't an issue, but it's when it's debilitating, that's when you have to take a closer look at it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So just look at the level of it and see how what it is they're doing with that, how it's going into their body and all.
Mm-hmm.
And turn it, yeah, find other ways to channel that stress and kind of repurpose it so that they can say, hey, this, you know, I can, you know, like I look like to look at it as a dial. Everything is kind of like you can dial it up or dial it down and to find the right level. So, great. Okay, well, thanks, everyone, Michelle and everyone here. Alex and Amy and all of you listening on the call, look forward to, I'll have this recording up shortly and some notes for you as well. And also that HuffPost Live, I'll send you the link for that so you can listen to the interview that I did on HuffPost Live. It was on Monday. But if you go to HuffPostLive.com, like H-U-F-F-P-O-S-T, HuffPostLive.com, and then just search on my name, then it'll come up right there too on stress and athletes. So and it was on Monday. Did that on April 20th. So thanks so much, everyone, and we'll talk soon. And if you have any questions, you're always welcome to email me with your questions. Thank you. All right, okay. We'll talk next time.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Oh, there you are.
Thanks, Dr. John.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Bye now.